Everything about the four young men I'm about to introduce you to is controversial, from the name to the music, which last year the FBI accused of encouraging violence against the police. Before they perform for us, let's welcome and talk to NWA. Give it up.
This is old footage from an Arsenio Hall Show interview with the rap group NWA.
Let's talk about, you know, I mentioned the controversy with the FBI, and of course we know about the controversy with the police. I'm sure you all have read. How did it all begin?
The song we made about the police, you know, a couple of years ago. Quite sure everybody's aware of that.
Yeah, it was, we can use the initial of the first word.
F the police.
Yeah.
You know?
And like once in everybody's lifetime, you know, they get harassed by the police for no reason. And everybody wants to say it, you know, but they can't say it on the spot because something happened to them, you know. And then in the ghetto or in the black community, you get harassed by the police just because of what you wear. And 9 times out of 10, you can't help but what you got on because that's all your family can afford you to wear. But they, you know, stereotype you as a gang member. So that's how it is, you know.
Now, so you're not saying that all police are bad?
Nah.
Not all police.
90% or more. Yeah. It's 10%. It's 10% that's good, but that 90% just give you that edge to that 10%. When you see them, you just click, you know? Right. So we did it on the records. That's our way of getting back at them for getting back at us for all them years. We couldn't do nothing.
That's the real MC Ren speaking to Arsenio Hall about the song F the Police. Now let's listen to a clip from the movie Straight Outta Compton. This scene takes place during a press conference about that same song.
Your songs, they glamorize the lifestyle of gangs, guns, drugs.
Our art is a reflection of our reality. What you see when you go outside your door?
I know what I see.
And it ain't glamorous.
You get AKs from Russia and cocaine from Colombia.
And ain't none of us got a passport, so... Yeah. Might want to check the source.
Yeah, next question.
Will you be more careful about what you say, how you say it?
No. Probably not.
Straight Outta Compton tells this story of young rappers and producers who are very honest in press conferences, whose drive to make music and pull themselves out of poverty in the 1980s brings them together against the establishment. It also tests their friendships when the stakes get high. The movie touches on themes like police brutality that are unfortunately back in the news today. And it's a true story, although some accuse it of revisionist history. More about that later. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's Central Standard is a Screen Time episode all about Straight Outta Compton. Our guests are a rapper, a Shakespearean scholar who also happens to be an NWA fan, and movie critic Russ Simmons. Russ, welcome back to Central Standard.
Good to be with you.
We've also got the Kansas City rapper known as Reach in the studio. He's an MC and arts educator. Hi, Reach.
Hi, good morning.
And Lori Ellinghausen. It's nice to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Good morning.
You're in the English department at UMKC where you teach Shakespeare, but you also teach courses on class, labor, and social hierarchies in literature. Those are appropriate themes for a discussion about Straight Outta Compton.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. My teaching and my research are very attuned to the dialogue between art and social reality as it manifests in social hierarchy. In the case of Straight Outta Compton, that would include race, but it also concerns questions of class and gender, different structures of oppression that play into art in different ways.
So let's start with everyone's answer to a simple question. Did you like Straight Outta Compton, Russ Simmons?
Absolutely, yes.
And Lori Ellinghausen?
Loved it.
Reach, how about you?
Loved it.
So we have three fans of the movie Straight Outta Compton, all coming to it from different perspectives. Reach, for listeners who don't know the story of NWA and haven't seen Straight Outta Compton yet, could you tell us about the group and why their music is such a big deal to so many people?
So for NWA, which was really one of the first groups to take hold and really kind of start the revolution for hip hop on the West Coast, the coming together of these four gentlemen. There was actually a larger group in the beginning, but the group that we all know assembled as NWA. Those four men, it was really important time for them to come together and kind of give a different, an alternative to the hip-hop that had begun the revolution.
What was the difference?
The difference was that in their upbringing in the community that they were raised in, these were communities, particularly in Compton, that were blighted, you know, kind of cities that had been forgotten about. So a lot of their music was similar in the sense that it dealt with some of the social you know, that they were dealing with in that area. But it really kind of referenced all of the things that they were dealing with poverty, with police brutality, as we mentioned a moment ago, and some of the other things that were evident in their communities.
Musically, what can you say about them?
Musically, it had a different sound. It was definitely influenced by some of the funk that had preceded it, which is evident in the film. So you got to hear a lot of some of the West Coast sound that, that later adapted a lot of synthy lines, that, stuff from keyboards and a lot of synthetic sounds.
So normally I have Russ Simmons give the film synopsis, but I'm really curious to hear it first in Shakespearean terms, tragic heroes, feuds, that kind of thing. So Laurie, tell us the basic plot of Straight Outta Compton with that kind of spin.
Oh, with a Shakespearean spin. Well, usually when people describe something that is not Shakespeare as Shakespearean, they mean one of two things. They're either referring to a story that is larger than life, that has implications beyond that story toward all other stories, for universal experience, for archetypal experience. And the other thing that people usually mean when they talk about the Shakespearean is, as you mentioned, the tragic, which is interesting because Shakespeare was very successful as at comedy as well, but there's something about the tragic that really attracts people. So the story of NWA, I think it has to do with five men coming together with a pure love and passion for music, as well as a very acute sense of the reality that was shaping their lives. And they made their art not only from an ideal of wanting to speak back to power, but also from an ideal of brotherhood. And I think that that's a film, that's a theme that comes out in the film as well. So in Shakespearean terms, a lot of the way that the film plays out has to do with the dilemma of the tragic hero, which is, to what degree are we to seek glory and success at the expense of our own ideals and where we come from and who we really are? And the other main Shakespearean theme that I see has to do with brother versus brother. I found that to be one of the most tragic elements of the film is the falling out between Ice Cube and the rest of the band, and then the falling out between Dre and Eazy-E later on. That reminded me a lot, actually, of Julius Caesar, where
Et tu, Brute?
Yes, exactly. This the pain of betrayal, as well as the pain of starting to lose touch with who you really are for the sake of commerce and for the sake of a vision of success. So I think that's a very Shakespearean dilemma, is to be caught in between those two situations and not necessarily know how to do it right. I think very few of us know how to do it right.
I think that's true. Russ, what's the more straightforward synopsis of this movie?
Well, basically, it's a historical overview of the rise of NWA and their conflicts with the police. And one of the things that's great about it is it shows the background of their experiences with the police, which informed their music. And it, for those who didn't know that background, it's a revelation, because you can walk out of the movie saying, okay, now I get it.
So just a heads up, our Screen Time series always comes with a giant spoiler alert all over it. This is an hour-long discussion, and we're not going to shy away from really digging in. So listen at your own risk, but seriously, it's also based on a true story that lots of moviegoers already know. So I don't think it's – that shouldn't spoil anything, really. Now that we've got that out of the way, I'd say we've got four main characters to establish: Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, Ice Cube, and Jerry Heller. So let's tell our listeners the basics they need to know about these four characters to follow our conversation about the film. Russ, tell us about Dr. Dre.
Okay, well, Dre was the driving force behind the rhythm and the techniques, and he was the guy who steered all of the other elements together. So he was kind of the captain of the ship. He wasn't necessarily the philosophical captain. You could argue that Ice Cube or even Eazy-E might have had a greater influence there, but he was the musician of the group.
And from a personal standpoint, what are the pressures acting on him?
Oh, well, you know, it's kind of funny because we were talking earlier in the green room waiting to come in about what's not in the film as opposed to what is. And some of the conflicts that would have made a really interesting story were left out. And, you know, I think you need to judge a film by what it is rather than what it isn't. So a lot of Dre's conflicts aren't in this film. There are a number of other conflicts that are.
Yeah. Which ones are?
Okay, well, as Lori pointed out, it's the brother versus brother, and it's the group and their relationship with authority and, you know, the oppressive society that they're looking at, you know, that it comes into their music.
With Dr. Dre, I feel like the conflict that's – the pressure that's kind of established on him is pressure from his family to succeed. His mom really
right.
wants him to do what she would consider making something of himself, mm-hmm. Which means being the owner of whatever it is he does. And
yes, and also the relationship with Suge Knight, which, you know, becomes a major component of, you know, the ongoing drama that later played out even after the movie was over.
Reach, tell us about Eazy-E. So we just heard about Dr. Dre. What about Eazy-E?
So Eazy-E was originally partnered with Dr. Dre to conceive this idea of creating this group. And initially, when he started, he wasn't a rapper, and even he self-identified himself as something other than a rapper. Even during his time after the group had started, so he really became kind of one of the founding members of the group, and also created the label Ruthless that the group ultimately were a part of.
The way the film portrays it, he was kind of brought in because he had some business savvy that they wanted to really capitalize on, and for him to do something that wouldn't land him in jail.
Right. Absolutely. So he comes in ultimately. I mean, he initially becomes kind of the financial backbone of the operation because of some of the things he was doing in the street. So he had the expendable income to create this imprint before he linked up with Jerry Heller.
And there's a really funny scene where Dr. Dre's kind of teaching him how to rap. Can you tell us about that scene? And as someone who is experienced as a rapper, like, what that scene, did that scene ring true to you?
Absolutely. I mean, there's certainly, even for Dr. Dre currently, there are certainly artists who are in the industry who don't have that kind of experience, who haven't grown up with hip-hop as writers or as purveyors of the art form from that end. So, you know, it was the technical aspects of being an MC is something that he had to learn. And it's not something that I think most people would say, was all that proficient at, but it was something that he was taught and he ultimately learned to do, got a command well enough to be an artist for a number of years.
What do you think is compelling about the character of Eazy-E? I mean, aside from music, just seeing this movie, what's his drama?
I think his drama is, again, trying to overcome, you know, the circumstances of the community that he lives in. I think he's trying to take his experience with business on the street and turn it into something legitimate. So it's that whole tension of trying to go clean and trying to, you know, live a life that won't land him in jail and also create something and capitalize on this opportunity to do music.
So we've heard about Dr. Dre and Eazy-E. Lori, what's your take on Ice Cube?
Ice Cube to me is the wit and the wordsmith in the band. And I know that when he left the group, Ren was considered.
Oh, we haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
Why? Let's talk about what makes him leave. He has, it seems, more of an instinct to question what's happening, to question success, to question motives of other people, to be maybe a little bit, some might say paranoid, but some might say rightly distrustful.
I would say rightly distrustful, given the fact that Eazy seemed to have this very close relationship with Heller.
So we haven't established Heller yet. He's the producer, and we'll get back
okay.
to him. But what is the character of Eazy-E?
The character of, you mean the character of Ice Cube?
Yes, sorry, the character
yeah,
of Ice
yeah.
Cube.
Yeah, the character of Ice Cube, I think that his art stems in large part from his observations and the anger that arises out of those observations. So he's very passionate, and there is something about his passion that makes him very articulate. A great storyteller, a great rhymer, a great wordsmith. And there is a scene in the film where he describes himself as a journalist. He describes himself this way to another journalist, and he says, I am a journalist just like you. I describe what I see on the streets. I'm not trying to glamorize. I am simply relating my reality. And I think that that is what drives Ice Cube, is to tell the truth about what he's seeing around him, and to tell the truth in a way that is memorable, that is catchy, that is vivid, in a way that really captivates audiences and reaches as much of an audience as is possible.
He's really, like the socio-political consciousness of this outfit. And Russ Simmons, Jerry Heller, we've heard references to him. He's played by Paul Giamatti. He's the big-time producer who becomes these guys' manager, and he is a really complex character. Sometimes you think he's a good guy, and sometimes you're pretty sure he's a bad guy.
Exactly. And he has the closest relationship with Eazy-E. He's the one that he brought in and to help them to handle all the business aspects that they, you know, were out of their purview. So he came in and he really did help them, and he really did promote the group and help get them off the ground. However, an argument can be made that he also exploited them and took most of the money, whereas, which is exactly the thing that Ice Cube was upset about. He wanted to get all this worked out in advance. He wanted to see the contracts. He wanted to see the money. He wanted to see the money flow, and he was kept in the dark. And that is the main conflict that he had with Heller, and that's why he broke off with the group.
So Jerry Heller also, there's a scene where the police stop these guys when they're standing outside his studio, assuming that they're up to no good, that they're thugs. And the interaction is pretty disturbing and violent, and Jerry intervenes. And I want us to listen to a little bit of that clip. Let's give a listen to Jerry Heller intervening as the police kind of harass his musicians.
Sit tight and let us do our job.
Hey, officer, I'm sorry. What is going
on
out? Can you stay right there, please? We're trying to check these bangers, make sure they're clean.
All right, I'm sorry. These are not bangers, okay? These are artists.
Excuse me, artists?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
What kind of artists?
Rappers, and they're working with me in the studio right now.
Well, see, rap is not an art. And I'm sorry, who are you?
I'm the manager.
Well, you're wasting your time, Mr. Manager.
You gotta be kidding me.
You're wasting your time.
Really?
These clients of yours, these rappers, they look like gang members.
You can't come down here and arrest people just because of what they look like. Are you crazy? But that's police harassment.
You said you're a manager, right?
Yeah.
Not a lawyer.
Does that matter? You cannot come down here and harass these guys because they're black.
That is, I would say, the scene that most kind of endears you to Jerry Heller in this movie. Reach, what's your response to this scene?
I think, you know, this is a very interesting time for hip hop, specifically for the group, because this is at a time where hip hop is still struggling for legitimacy in the mainstream to be accepted as a viable art form. So, you know, this is a time in dealing in that community and dealing with these kind of strange relationships between the police and the black and brown people in that community. I think that's ultimately what you see. That's ultimately what comes out in their relationships with the police and all of the struggles and not being respected or understood or appreciated for what they were trying to do at the time in creating really this legacy for the group.
So that moment, at least according to the movie, inspires a song that we'll have to call F the Police this morning. Reach, tell us about the real life controversy surrounding this song.
So once that song was released, that was kind of a firestorm in the mainstream, in the news. This idea of intimating these very kind of aggressive thoughts toward police brutality and toward, you know, not having your humanity acknowledged and respected by law enforcement. So at the time when this song came out, you know, this became a firestorm. And ultimately, you know, they were receiving letters from the FBI. There's the scene where they're performing in Detroit where the police are there to see if they're going to perform this song. They're being told before the show that they can't perform this song. So this ultimately, like, sets a huge stage for a very tense relationship between the mainstream media, which still doesn't really acknowledge hip hop as legitimate at that time, and also law enforcement in America.
That scene, it was portraying a 1989 show in Detroit. It's a huge battle scene as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's the climactic scene in the conflict between the police and NWA. Russ, how do you think that the movie establishes the tension in this scene? I mean, describe it in cinematic terms.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most important scene in the film because, you know, the philosophy behind their the content of their music is played out in this scene. You see, because you can walk away after you see that. So, okay, now I get it. I understand why they're upset. I understand that they were being harassed by the police. And that is what sets up everything else. Now, there are ups and downs that happen after that, but that's really the scene that informs it all.
Lori, what do you think about this scene?
I really could feel the tension there. A very palpable tension between what was going on stage and us knowing as an audience, as the film audience, that the police were out there in the crowd. And it was really interesting because there were so many different perspectives at work.
Yeah, the whole crowd has their middle fingers up.
Uh-huh. Yes.
The police have told them not to do this, and they're standing there watching it all happen, watching a giant crowd of people singing along to this song about
yes.
them. And the moment where I think it was Ice Cube who makes the decision, like, we're going to go ahead with this.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it percolating in his head. You can see him
yes.
just standing there pacing around and making that decision. So beautifully done.
Absolutely. I mean, this is artists who are dealing with these strained relationships with police every day. So you finally have an opportunity in this stage and a platform to speak out against it, to give a voice to other people who obviously in the Detroit community could relate to. You want to use that platform to speak out and give people a voice to say, to honor as a way to affirm their own humanity.
And one other thing about that scene, just as it relates to Jerry Heller, I mean, he shows his righteous indignation when he confronts the police. And at that time, you think, okay, right on. Good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, he's on their side.
However, as the movie progresses, you think back on that scene and think maybe he was just protecting his investment. So it really depends upon at any time, I think that could probably be true because this is a complex character. So he's a good guy and a bad guy.
Yeah, and at that moment when he had intervened in the interaction with the police, mm-hmm. A black police officer refers to Jerry Heller as the master of these guys. That's, you know, that was a real sting, I mm-hmm. think. What we've heard this idea about this group of musicians being actually reporters, reporting on life in Compton. What do you guys think of that idea? Because, I mean, especially as a response to the accusation that they're glamorizing or glorifying violence and drugs and that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, anytime you talk openly about those conditions, anytime you kind of hold up a mirror to the culture at large to talk about some of these ugly truths about our society, that's never going to be received well, particularly when it's coming from people who oftentimes don't have a voice and who haven't been heard from. So, you know, that opportunity to use that stage to talk about the realities, they're always going to look at it as an opportunity to voice their concerns.
Well, and I think that question is interesting in light of the statement that the police officers make when they are trying to pick up these young men. They say rap is not art. And if we think about, well, what do we mean when we talk about art? What is the function of art? What is it supposed to do? Art is not... It's not a warm and fuzzy sort of thing necessarily. Art is meant to provoke us and to question reality and ask audiences to question reality. And that means telling the truth, and the truth is not necessarily pretty.
I'm curious about what everyone here was doing when the events in this movie were unfolding and what your awareness of it was. I will acknowledge that for myself, I was living comfortably in Kansas City and pretty unaware that most of these things were going on at the time. I've learned about them after the fact for the most part. But what about you guys? Reach?
You know, I certainly didn't. I grew up in a mostly suburban community. And at that time, you know, I was still very young, probably in the early part of my high school days. So, you know, I had some sense of how things were around the country, relationships between, you know, poor communities, inner city kids, and the police. So I had a general sense of it, but I wasn't completely exposed to
it. Yeah, and you weren't quite following the music yet, or you were?
No, I was definitely following the music. I'd been following hip hop probably for the 7 or 8 years prior to when they got established.
Did you hear the stories about these controversies at the time?
Absolutely. You know, it's certainly not like it is today, where everything is kind of at the end of your fingertips with social media. But, you know, through all of the media sources, all of these things were very much saturating television and radio then.
What about you guys?
I was doing this show, I think. But I recall at the time when all the controversy started to really bubble up. All I knew was what I saw in the media. And I thought, my perception was, these are a bunch of gangbangers trying to start trouble. And so that was the perception I had because that's what I saw. And it's over time, and particularly if you see this film, you get a lot more background, you get a much wider and broader perspective. And that's what I was missing at the time.
Lori?
I was finishing high school. While these incidents were taking place, finishing high school and starting college. And like Reach, I was a suburban kid. My hometown was Houston, Texas. And I actually was aware of a lot of the events because I was living in a city that was, at the time, unfortunately, very well known for police brutality. There was a local incident of a woman who was shot under suspicious circumstances. Her name was Ida Lee Delaney. There was a local hip hop group named the Ghetto Boys who regularly referred to that incident in their music. So through hip hop music, as well as just through the news, I was aware of what was going on with NWA and the FBI.
I'm interested in this relationship between suburban teenagers and this kind of rap music that references a reality that is so far from their reality, and that there does seem to be a really strong passion for. I mean, it's today, too, really strong passion for this music. And I know all art strives for universality on some level, but the connection is still a little bit unexpected in some ways. What do you guys think is at play there?
Well, I mean, I think if you didn't grow up in inner city communities, if you didn't grow up in these blighted kind of communities, it really was a window into those communities to see how, you know, what was actually happening. And they very much were reporters talking about some of the circumstances and the conditions of those communities. So you really got a chance to kind of look into the lives of people who live very differently than you.
Central Standard's off to a break. What's your connection with rap music and NWA? And did that affect your review of Straight Outta Compton? Call 816-235-2888. You can compare notes with a rapper, a Shakespearean scholar, and a movie critic when we return. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. We're back. It's Central Standard's Screen Time series, and today we're talking about Straight Outta Compton. Critic Russ Simmons, welcome back.
Thanks.
And hello again, MC Reach.
Hi.
Lori Ellinghausen here with a Shakespearean take on the movie. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
We've established the characters and dramas and a lot of the relevance in Straight Outta Compton, but we haven't talked about what's not in the movie. We've hinted that that's been an issue for some people. Most of what's been an issue has been the absence of the women. And Lori, you're nodding enthusiastically.
Yeah. Well, as a hip hop fan, the misogyny that is often alleged in hip hop has always been a little bit of a point of conflict for me. And every piece of art is going to offer a perspective. The film offered one perspective. There are also other perspectives.
What would you say is the perspective of the film?
The perspective of the film is to tell the story of NWA from the perspective of its members, which has to do with the themes of art and commerce and social reality. the things we've been hearing about in the news having to do with relationships with women were not necessarily central to that story
and those
to the
things,
ones telling it.
Yeah, those things we've been hearing in the news have to do with violence and abuse on some level and,
yes.
and pretty well-known incidents. So, yeah, things that people were maybe surprised to not see there.
Absolutely. And you know, with any director doing a biopic, there are always angles and, you know, there's certain narratives you want to tell and others you want to avoid. So I don't know specifically what F. Gary Gray's thought process was, but definitely some of the women that, not just the women that there are controversy swirling about now, but also the wives of the men and the women that were in their lives at the time.
Yeah, those characters, I would say, do kind of appear without a lot of explanation or backstory.
One thing that I think is important to remember is that this film was produced by Ice Cube and Dr. Dre, so they're going to bring their perspective to it, which is fine, particularly if you know that in advance. You're not going to see the whole story. One thing that, as a film critic, I try to do is to judge a film by what it is rather than for what it isn't. And so, yes, maybe you could do a whole mini-series and bring in all kinds of other plot lines and stories, but just because those stories weren't told doesn't mean that the story that was told wasn't good.
And another thing that I would add is that just like art itself is not necessarily warm and fuzzy, neither are artists perfect human beings. I think that we have a tendency to treat the artist as a human, as a hero, just like we tend to do with sports figures, perhaps, and other celebrities. And they are fallible human beings with faults. And those, to my mind, are part of the total story, and that we can enjoy the art and also hold artists accountable for their behavior. I mean, I think we could do both at once.
So, yeah, this movie, I don't think does show them as perfect human beings, but this is definitely, and I would say that gender power struggles are at least hinted at in the movie, even though these incidents are not. How do you guys think women are portrayed in Straight Outta Compton and in hip-hop more generally?
Well, there's one character, really the only partially developed female character is the wife of Eazy-E, and her influence does come in, and you see it's in a gentle way, but you can see that she's very powerful, and her voice is definitely being heard in their relationship, and it definitely changes things when she takes it upon herself to do the research into how Jerry Heller had been conducting their business.
Yeah, she analyzes some contracts and documents that no one had read all that carefully. Yeah.
And the same is true of Dr. Dre's mother, who appears at the first half of the film and is really the strong matriarch trying to push her son in the right direction.
Reach, you refer to your music as blue-collar rap, and you've said that you're trying to combat an industry saturated with propaganda. I'm really curious what you mean by that.
I think, for me, I try to speak about the issues that everyone is dealing with in life. So, you know, trying to make ends meet, trying to raise kids, dealing with all of these external issues in society. And so my music really is just a kind of putting a soundtrack to life. And I try to have a positive take on the things that I deal with. And I really try to speak to the everyday person. You know, not every listener of hip hop can relate to yachts and, you know, these million-dollar homes, but everybody knows what it's like to, you know, lose a parent or have struggles with bills, you know. So I try to take that everyday approach that speaks to, you know, every man.
You helped form a local independent rap label, and you've been on national tour. And so with that perspective to draw from, what do you think about the way Straight Outta Compton represents the business of music, the industry?
I think it's an excellent take on the industry on both sides of it. Being an artist, dealing with labels, dealing with some of the shady tactics of certain businessmen in the industry, and then also the other side of it where you see toward the end of the film where you see Dr. Dre kind of owning himself, starting his own label, and really kind of taking charge of his career and the business and, you know, his stake in himself as an artist and a producer.
What do you think is going on like within the music industry, with this relationship between artists and producers and labels. I mean, it the way that the movie portrays it, it really feels like people with a lot of drive who are trying to better themselves in the course of doing that are sort of taken advantage of and often mixed up in just amounts of money that are overwhelming and have a lot of potential to corrupt.
Certainly. I mean, that's kind of a common story. And, you know, when you take these kids coming out of these poor Compton communities and you present a check for, you know, a five-figure check for the first time, you know, that's something that, you know, your eyes light up. And this is something that is, this is the kind of money that alters and changes your life. But then as you grow and as you learn, you start to want to look at contracts and you start to think about things like recouping and royalties and where is this money going and, you know, how are we being paid? You want to think about those things because you don't want to be taken advantage of. And I think that's one thing that Ice Cube kind of, that was a big part of Ice Cube's role in the film, is to think very seriously about the business side of it.
Lori, go on.
I was just going to say, incidentally, we just got a tweet that was questioning the, you know, whether or not is justified given the fact that these guys produced the movie themselves. Does that justify them editing women out of their life in the movie? And I could totally get that. I mean, I see your perspective. All I was trying to say was that there's a lot of things, a lot of good and bad that could have been in this movie, that there's only so much time you can do. It's a long movie as it is.
Absolutely.
Well, and that idea, I mean, Lori, you were saying that we tend to think of artists as heroes and we forget that they're fallible human beings. And I think it's valid to ask if that's a problem in how we approach art, then is it also a problem to leave out a major controversy? Dr. Dre has come out with an apology to those women since mm-hmm. that criticism mm-hmm. arose, which seems like it's a valuable moment in and of itself.
Well, no work of art exists in isolation. From other things in society, from relationships with others. And in my opinion, it is absolutely valid to talk about who the artist is as a person and what they do, particularly in the case of hip hop, when there's been so much controversy surrounding accusations of misogyny. You know, Dee Barnes was a bit of a punchline for a long time.
And she was beat up by Dr. Dre after a show she was interviewing.
She was. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's part of the song, I think it's definitely fair game to talk about it. And an analogy that I would choose would be my online Shakespeare class includes a viewing of Roman Polanski's adaptation of Macbeth. And inevitably, my students start to talk about Roman Polanski mm-hmm. and some of his alleged sexual crimes. Well, in Polanski's home country of France, he is generally given a bit of a pass. They tend to say in France, well, he's an artist, right? I don't think that art should be taken in isolation from an artist's life. I think it's all an important part of the conversation. So that would be my take on some of these news issues in the offing.
We've got to take one last break, and you've got just a little while to get in on the discussion. What's your take on Straight Outta Compton, the themes it addresses and the themes it doesn't? 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, back in a minute. This is Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today, in case you're headed to the movies, we're having an in-depth discussion about Straight Outta Compton, the movie about the rap group N.W.A. It's about brotherhood, betrayal, police brutality, money, and music. Our guests are MC Reach, a musician and arts educator, Shakespearean scholar Lori Ellinghausen, and movie critic Russ Simmons. And we've been talking about some of the public controversy surrounding the movie, that especially the omission of some incidents involving violence against women. But the portrayal of women at parties and stuff in the movie, what do you guys think about that? That was a little bit shocking, I would say.
They had a bohemian lifestyle, let's just put it that way. As a matter of fact, MC Ren, after he left the group, became a porn producer and a very successful one, I might add. So, yeah, you might look at that and say, okay, this is their Achilles heel in some ways, that I think also probably led to the demise of the group, because they had taken the success that they had and they used at least some of it to just have a really, really good time for a short amount of time. And that at the expense of women, there's no question about it, with the drugs and the girls and all of that. I will say one thing, though. I've had the opportunity to chat a couple of times with Ice Cube. And if you only knew him from what you saw or what you heard in passing from NWA, you would think he was this scary criminal kind of guy, when the reality is he's the nicest, warmest guy you could want to meet, a family man, and really funny.
How did you meet Ice Cube?
I've interviewed him for a couple of the films that he's done. And of course, he's done really family-oriented stuff like Are We There Yet?, which is sort of like something that Chevy Chase might have done back in the day. You know, but that's his reality. He is a family guy. And so when you see that in contrast to the angry young black man that he was during his NWA years, you think you should listen to what he says as well as taking a look at what he appears to be.
Ice Cube, as a family man, is actually kind of registered in the movie, isn't it? Because I was sitting there watching the Ice Cube character thinking, boy, they sure did find a dead ringer for Ice Cube. And I find out later that was actually Ice Cube's son. So I think that was an interesting fact about the film.
Yeah. O'Shea Jackson Jr., his son, who studied for 2 years after Ice Cube approached him and asked him to do the film, between taking auditions, going to acting classes, that was a very important aspect of Ice Cube's life as a father and in reality. And, you know, this is a time in their lives where the spoils of fame are all at the ends of their fingertips, and women, obviously, or one of them, drugs is obviously one of them. So, you know, these are men who have ultimately grown, and all of them who are still alive. You know, family's a very important aspect of their lives. But at that time, you know, being young and being dumb and impressionable and you having the world at your fingertips that way, sometimes women can be mistreated.
I want to hear, we're going to get back to this topic in a second, but we haven't heard any music yet in this show, and this is... That is a big part of what this movie is about, and that's a big part of what people are enjoying about reliving in the movie theater. So let's hear a little bit of the song Express Yourself, and then we'll be right back.
Now, get back to the PG. That's program, and it's easy. Trey is back, New Jack's a man hollow. Expressing ain't the subject because they like to follow the words, the style, the trend, the records I spin again and again and again. Yeah, you're on the other end. Watch your brother blend dope rhymes with no help. There's no fessing against it while I'm expressing myself. It's crazy to see people be what society wants them to be, but not me. Ruthless is the way to go. They know others say rhymes which fail to be original, or they kill where the hip-hop starts. Forget about the ghetto and rap for the pop charts. Some musicians cuss at home, but scared to use profanity when up on the microphone. Yeah, they want reality, but you will hear none. They'd rather exaggerate a little fiction. Some say no to drugs and take a stand.
So many of the themes we've talked about in this song, especially this idea of rapping for the pop charts. What do you think is the significance of that in the story of the history of NWA?
I think NWA, one of the central themes of NWA was always wanting to be authentic to the lives that they led and all of the things that really kind of informed their careers. So, you know, they were very much honest about their realities, very much honest about where they were as men at that time in their art.
Let's talk to Sonia, or perhaps Sonia, in Gladstone. Hi, Sonia.
Hi, how you doing? I love your show, but I do not understand why there is not a black woman on your panel discussing this movie. I had a girlfriend that saw part of the movie in California, she said her and her girls walked out because of the fact that there was no positive images of African-American women in this movie. Because I still plan on seeing it, but I'll probably wait till it comes on DVD.
So you can watch it at home in case you got to walk out.
I don't think it's fair that a black woman are not given a voice on your panel. And you are really good. I like your show, and I listen to it as much as I can.
Thanks. No, but, I appreciate that perspective.
It's not fair. It's like the slave mentality. African-American men still have this attitude that that we do not enjoy being respected. And that's a slave mentality that African-American women were portrayed so negatively in the movie. That's slave mentality. And I believe if an African-American woman was on your panel, she would have spoken up about that.
I hear a lot of pain in that comment, and I think that is important to acknowledge. I mean, this is an issue that people still talk about today, and I wonder if hearing from Sonia changes anyone's idea about what they saw in the movie.
I would just say again that I completely understand her point. The movie is what it is, you know, and if there should be another perspective, perhaps there can be a whole other film that is, you know, deals with the Dr. Dre incident, for example. I think that could be fodder for a really interesting movie.
Sounds like maybe someone else needs to make a second movie,
exactly.
Perhaps. But not everyone has the funding and positioning
right.
to make a movie.
I do think that her comment is correct, that the black woman's perspective is important in a discussion of this film. One thing that I would say is that I think it would be a shame if folks saw this film and the treatment of women and said, well, that's hip-hop culture. When in fact, there are lots of prominent artists in the hip hop community who have spoken out against misogyny and have advocated for black women. And the most prominent person I can think of would be Chuck D from Public Enemy. He's taken on the allegations of misogyny and spoken out against misogynist elements of hip hop for a long time now. And he has a radio program. He's still making music. So I think that characterizing all hip hop in that way would be painting it with a bit of a broad brush.
Absolutely. And I think it's a fair point. I think it's a fair challenge to hip hop. I mean, that's one of the issues that has long been addressed and one that's long been talked about with hip hop is that element of misogyny and the commodification of women. So that is something that was evident in the film. I would beg to differ. And I think that Eazy-E's wife and Dr. Dre's mom were strong characters who were portrayed in a positive light. So, I think it's all in your perspective and how you come to it. But certainly, you know, I wouldn't shy away from those challenges about misogyny in the film and in the in hip hop culture itself.
This past weekend, I happened to stumble upon an anti-violence rally in KCK, and someone got on the megaphone and told the crowd to skip Straight Outta Compton because he'd live Straight Outta Compton. And I'm curious what you think that means and if you think that's something to consider as we leave this conversation as well.
I think that's been one of the criticisms of the film is that some people believe that it is a film that reinforces negative imagery. Both of the culture and of African-American people. So that's been one big criticism of the film. And it's not one that I agree with completely. I certainly see the challenges and I certainly understand that actors in the business are looking for opportunities to portray more positive images and to push, you know, certain more positive ideas. But I certainly understand.
Well, our time is up for today's Central Standard, which has been a screen time discussion all about Straight Outta Compton. You can listen back or share it with your friends at kcur.org/Central Standard later today. Reach, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Lori Ellinghausen from UMKC's English Department, thanks for getting Shakespearean on us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Russ Simmons, as always, thanks so much.
Great to be with you.
Tune in for the next Screen Time in September. We're headed to the weekend, but you can keep up with the Central Standard Lifestyle by following us on Twitter. We're @KCURCST, and I'm @ Gina KCUR. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with Fridays Like Today by Jen Chin. We get lots of help from Andrea Tudhope. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs right here in Kansas City. I'm Gina Kaufman, and that's a wrap. Have a great weekend, everyone.
You've been listening to Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR HD1, Kansas City Public Media. Stay with us for Up to Date, coming up next with the DVD Gurus. Rooftop residential solar is booming, but can homegrown energy play nice with big utilities? We'll talk about it on Science Friday today. Plus, join KCUR for the Sci-Fry Book Club, featuring The Soul of a New Machine. It starts at 2. Central Standard is supported by St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute, celebrating 30 years of continuous adult heart transplant care. St. Luke's has been honored to transform the lives of nearly 700 people. Details are online at stlukeskc.org/heart. It's a